The Around the NFL Podcast. Watch them whip. Watch them nay-nay.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast presented by New Era. Name is Dan Hansis. Joined in a room filled with heroes Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Happy Monday. It's Grind 30, Mark.
It is. Worked yesterday, so it's already in the middle of my week.
Grind 45.
It's Grind 45. Quarter to grind. big weekend, Greg. How was your weekend?
It was delicious.
Delicious.
Sure, why not?
That's good.
Although I barely ate, so that's maybe not the right
answer. Nice descriptive word, though, because later on in today's show, we're going to use one word describing a team, player, situation after 1 week of training camp. Delicious. A nice way to describe the weekend, even if it's not literally about food.
Yeah, it was just, you know, fun. There's a lot to chew on.
Very nice.
Wow.
Very nice there as well. Well done. Wes, how was your weekend?
It was delicious. I made my 36-ingredient spaghetti sauce yesterday.
Whoa.
36?
Took all day. Oh, I've got plenty. I'll bring it in.
Are you just throwing random things from the refrigerator in when you get past 25 ingredients?
Well, first of all, that's how people should cook. Whatever's in your kitchen, you throw it in. That's how cooking has always been done. This idea that you have to follow a recipe is ridiculous.
Wes, you're like a Southern woman from 1912. Throw it in there, sugar. Give it a little taste.
That's how cooking's done. That's the art of it. Like this idea that there's a recipe. You'll never be a good cook if you follow recipes because you're doing someone else's cooking.
Mark, you're a noted fooditarian, so maybe you wouldn't use delicious as a descriptive term, but maybe you would. How was your weekend?
B minus, C plus, tops.
Okay.
I saw your friend.
I have my gripes.
Nikki, so my friend.
Your friend Nikki Glaser at the
you
roast
did.
Battle. I went to the taping of Roast Battle.
Did you say that you
Comedy Central.
You worked with me and were best friends? Did you talk to her?
No, it wasn't. Oh. It wasn't a deep conversation or anything.
I saw your friend Tony Jeselnik at a
RGVP.
Jeff Ross taping a couple years back. I introduced myself. He was very nice. I said, hey, great. I work with him. That would have been a nice, like, comedian trade-off there. Complete the circle of conversation.
Together. Next time.
Yeah, maybe next time. So we got a good show coming up today. Yes, the one-word seg, and then some news, including we're down to just one rookie, first-round rookie without a deal. Thank goodness my team's not attached, and some Dez Bryant juice. You know, it's that time. It's that time, folks. It's time to talk some football. Let's do some news.
They were with a dog sitter, but they're like so – my husband picked them up, and they've been so anxious and stressed out ever since he got them. So I think they had a tough vacation.
What is that? I mean, I know it's Colleen Wolf talking
is it?
About
I haven't,
dogs.
I haven't heard Colleen in so long that I don't even know if that's her.
What is the? What was the point of that?
Watching the remote like feed, and that was her talking during inside training camp, and I like was just listening to that. And
she's going
to
love that.
And I had to clip it off because I was like, this is just on my TV.
That right is now. Fair. She was on vacation for roughly 45 to 50 days and not with the dogs. So the dogs probably are a little antsy at this point.
Yeah, it's on brand for Erica's appreciation / you know, maybe obsession with Colleen. It all really works.
It's a real thing. Yes or no? A little bit.
Yeah, it's mutual, though.
Mm. No doubt.
Definitely mutual.
Mutual
There's
obsession.
Tons of evidence to point that it's mutual. I
see Emma VB back there. Nod or shake your head. Is the obsession mutual? Emma.
Ooh. That's just Emma's
shaking.
Jealousy coming through.
Let's start with, yes, the first-round rookies. Sam Darnold and the Jets get a deal done, and thank God. Rap Sheet reported Monday that the Jets and Darnold agreed to terms 4-year, $30.25 million fully guaranteed. The signing became official this morning. Darnold joined his new teammates on the field in practice, so that drama is in the rear view, and it was a very Jets drama shaping up, so I'm very happy. And I don't even know, and I don't even care, honestly, the holdup, I believe it was about offsets. I don't know who won, who lost. I don't care. It's annoying, but that's taken care of, and it leaves just one first-rounder without a deal, and it's Bears linebacker Roquan Smith, who still doesn't have a deal, and it's part of the holdup is potential fines or punishment that could be tied into the league's new helmet rule. So that's, if I'm a Bears fan, I'm a little nervous because that just sounds dicey. Let's start With Darnold, your thoughts, Mark?
I mean, with Darnold, I almost feel that when this bubbled up, that there was this snag over the weekend that was making this more of an issue, because Greg made the point on Friday down in the office, like, listen, if Darnold's still not there on Monday, Dan, we're going to have to finally talk about him, because it's becoming
something.
Not
that I was putting it off.
No, but it's just a kind of, you felt like this will get done. They'll salt this away. But I almost thought that the swift reaction against Darnold's camp and the Jets might have pushed both sides to end the ugly PR and get this thing done, because it really wasn't a very typical thing that they were caught up on. It was forfeiture language, according to Michael Silver. And the other reporters had it based on other stuff. Forfeiture language means, like, it's you could lose guaranteed money if you get hurt skiing, or Silver referenced hiking. I don't know how much hiking Sam Darnold does, but apparently he is very obsessed with that side hobby off the field.
I don't know about the forfeiture language, and I don't think any football fan cares about the forfeiture language, but he's going to get all $20 million of his signing bonus within the next 2 weeks, which good for Sam Darnold.
Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal that he missed a few days, but the battle that they were having contractually included really the same topic as Roquan Smith does. It was basically, can they take away your guaranteed money for on-field rules violations? And so that Saquon Barkley had it written into his contract, so he's protected. The Jets did bend on that topic. And so the Bears, it's hard to, like, put – from our perspective, blame on one side or another. It's just annoying. The system is not set up to have holdouts. But in this case, it really does seem like the Bears are trying to get something a little ridiculous that no other teams are trying to get, and that the Bears are out on an island, and Roquan Smith's agent, understandably, is trying to not set a precedent.
I think you can question whether it's worth it for an organization to have their first-round pick miss extended action over fines, on-field suspension, from on-field rules, like suspensions and fines from that. Like, it's not worth it to have them miss that time.
And they're, it's a new development that they're trying to insert this into the contract. The rookie is reported for the Bears 2 weeks ago. So this is a pretty long holdout for Roquan Smith.
Mm. And another new Jets news, new uniforms coming next year, Mark.
Ooh.
What if they bring back the 80s Jet?
Well, I was going to say, is it new, or are you going to revert to one of the
it'll
old classics?
Sort of, I bet it'll be like a combination where maybe the 80s Jet's back, but it's in like a new
one. I would just say be careful what you wish for, because I was excited when Cleveland announced
say,
new
what
uniforms.
What if the Jets just put like Cleveland again across the Jets?
They can have Cleveland's current uniforms as their old ones.
Hardland.
I do like the Jets didn't try to like pretend like they were punishing Darnold for this at all. He jogged onto practice halfway through it starting. He gets a slow clap, and he immediately is getting first-team reps.
We have props on the sandwiches on the line, a tag-team sandwich prop. If he missed too much more time, it really would have put into peril any chance of a week one starting. Now it remains wide open. Moving on, the Seattle Seahawks last season pulled the trigger on a trade to acquire left tackle Dwayne Brown from the Texans. He immediately filled a void for Seattle, and now the two sides are locked into a long-term deal. The team announced they've signed Brown to a multi-year contract extension. Rap Sheet reports the deal worth $36.5 million. This has been something that's going on for weeks. Brown had been set to enter the final year of a contract worth $9.75 million. Now he's in Seattle through 2021. Everybody getting paid on the line right now, Greg.
Yeah, he improved them immediately. And so if you're a halfway decent starter, he's now signed until he's 36 years old. I think there's a chance that the Seahawks offensive line is significantly better because of Dwayne Brown and because of just getting rid of Tom Cable. That if you just have sort of average coaching and a little bit of Dwayne Brown, then maybe they're fine, and that's a big room for improvement.
It's a huge spot for them, an issue for them for years and years. And they gave up a 2018 third rounder and a 2019 second rounder, so you couldn't let this deal not get done. You've already put resources into Brown.
His strong play down the stretch really obscured how inept the rest of the offensive line was, because he was on the field for those games when Aaron Donald was just wrecking the entire line and Russell Wilson couldn't do anything. So you've got Dwayne Brown, but I'm far from convinced that they're going to be a better offensive line this year.
In injury news, yes, it's training camp. Guys are practicing. People get hurt. It sucks. We'll start with the Panthers, where right tackle Darrell Williams suffered a dislocated kneecap and an MCL tear on Saturday in practice. No timetable yet, but this seems like something that could end Williams' season. How much is this going to hurt Carolina, Wes?
Well, you would think if you spend a second-round pick on a guy the year before, Taylor Moton, the guy they drafted last year, that he ought to be ready after a year of coaching in the NFL in the weight room, that he ought to be ready to step right in at right tackle and maybe not be that Pro Bowl-level guy that Darrell Williams was last year, but good enough.
But this is why guys hold out. You know, he was an all-pro who was underpaid going into his contract year, and if he held out, he probably would have just gotten a big contract. And only in football is it when news comes out that he's got a dislocated kneecap or whatever it is and a torn MCL, and everyone was like, oh, great news. Oh, good news. Not as bad as everyone expected. Because when he went down, they thought, okay, he's out for the year. And now he's like, maybe not out for the whole year. Maybe he'll return.
Doesn't sound like a highly fun injury.
No, that sounds terrible.
Well, this next injury I'm going to talk about ties into that. So that was, you know, wishful thinking to try to tie Williams' injury into something that wasn't too serious. Ramon Foster for the Steelers, he collapses in a heap. He gets carted off from practice. You're expecting, oh, God, we just lost our guard. Major injury, lost for the season. No, it's hyperextended, which is a best-case scenario in this situation, and a bone bruise. He's expected to miss 4 or 5 weeks. So his status for week one up in the air, but that could have been worse. It obviously looked terrible, and Twitter was freaking out about it for a moment.
Well, that's the window. They're hoping week one, and this guy's played more snaps for Pittsburgh than any other player on the offensive roster since 2009. So he's been durable. He's been part of that offense. He's not young, but I guess for them, it's BJ Finney as the backup.
They have
Wes, your scouting report on BJ Finney, I'll leave that to you.
He's fine. They got away with Marcus Gilbert at right tackle out for a big portion of last year. They'll be fine if Ramon Foster misses a game or two.
And finally, Elijah McGuire, Jets' second-year rookie, had some moments last year, and it looked like he had a roster spot locked up. This year, he suffered a broken foot. He's going to have to undergo surgery. He'll be out 6 weeks, could get the boomerang IR designation. We'll see. And that could be good news for Thomas Rawls. If you're wondering, where's Thomas Rawls these days? He's on the Jets roster trying to make the team. He's a bubble guy. This might allow him to catch on. And the Jets' backfield is somewhat wide open, I think, so we'll see how that shakes out. Dez Bryant on Friday. You know, it's the afternoon in the newsroom. Everybody wants to unwind a little bit, maybe. But there was no unwinding, especially not for young Mark Sessler, who was tasked with writing a story about Dez, who went ham. He went nuts on Twitter people started, I guess, were adding him actually, he saw the Stephen Jones, the president of the Cowboys and Jarrah's son, had made a comment how Dak could be better this season because he'll be able to progress without having Dez in his face, you know, all the time, which seemed unnecessary in Dez's defense. So Dez starts going at it with people on Twitter, making statements about how the team treated him, how certain players on the team, including Sean Lee, talked behind his back and weren't real with him, leading to one of the immortal nicknames, Greg Rosenthal.
Snake Lee.
Snake Lee!
Sounds like a wrestler from the 80s.
Yes, it does.
So Dez, not happy and still a free agent. Perhaps a little bit surprising, Mark, that he would be so vocal about his displeasure with his former team when you really maybe want to put your best foot forward while unemployed.
Well, right, because while this was happening, in the atmosphere was another report that the Cleveland Browns are interested in bringing in Dez Bryant with Josh Gordon, you know, in absentia at the moment. So it's a bad look, and for sure. And there are actually people that have been hanging around Cleveland's camp sort of saying, no, this is not a good person to bring. This would not be the right person to bring into what the Browns have in their wide receiver room. Now, they have some characters in there to begin with. But I just think if you're Dez Bryant too, where would you go where you're probably going to be the third or fourth receiver? That's not a good mix for him, I don't think, in there.
Let's open the kimono a little bit here. At the same time you were writing about this and Dez was tweeting, I was tasked with writing a post that Dez was going to sign with a different team.
Yeah.
And neither the Browns nor this undisclosed team has signed him since all these tweets.
We did report on air, Jane Slater, that another team was interested, and she said that team was not bothered by his tweet storm, that whatever their interest level was not going to be affected. We'll see. I don't know. It hasn't been signed yet, but maybe it's not a huge hurry.
And if listeners find it interesting that we're saying what team and Wes is hinting that he knows the team, guess what? We do know the team.
but we will not tell you because we're journalists and we protect our sources.
It's called integrity.
And we protect our own fellow colleagues in the field.
I have no sources on this. Jane does.
I have so many thoughts on this.
Jane
story.
Can say, in other words, not for us.
Right. It's not my place.
Yeah.
But I'll start with that the whole storyline is especially annoying because it was all based on a growing terrible trend, which is that whoever was running SiriusXM's Twitter account is basically responsible for this entire story because he or she paraphrased it poorly. When the full quote came out, number one, Jason Witten was also included as a guy in Des Bryant's ear. And with a little more
Snake
context,
Witten?
It didn't sound quite as bad. The way that they paraphrased it, and if you're going to paraphrase something, you better get the true meaning of the quote right. And whoever was running that Twitter account, and I don't know if they were trying to get more attention or if they were just being lazy, made Stephen Jones sound a lot worse. And so Des Bryant, I think, understandably got upset based on hearing that. And all of this discussion for a couple hours on Twitter and across the country is because someone did poorly at their job.
Jabroni. Could have been avoided.
Yeah.
Entirely. I mean, that said, it takes the Des Bryant half of the equation to respond the way he did. Not every player would decide to do
Des
that
is
at all.
Des.
Right.
The
comment was still a little poking the bear unnecessarily at Des, but it wasn't quite as dramatic, and it did include Jason Witten in it. Hmm.
The nature of Twitter often leaves out context. That's just the way it is.
I also thought, and my other takeaway was, the Cowboys are the Cowboys because there is no other team in the league that would make Sean Lee, who had spoken to the media the day before,
yes, good point,
talk to the media for 30 seconds while walking off the field without probably even have seen the tweet himself. I'm sure their PR director gave him a background, but he basically said, Sean, you got to address this with the media right now. Everyone else would just try to avoid the issue, but instead they want the story to be as big as possible until they get Sean Lee to comment on it. And he was, you know, pretty hardcore about that Des should have been more of a leader last year, and then it really blows.
That would drive me crazy if I was a certain type of personality, if I was a guy that sought to avoid that type of circus and my team was asking me to feed into it. I mean, that is...
Like, you can't be a coach for the Cowboys unless you're willing to be as media, you know, available as possible.
Speaking of Jason Witten and social media, I came across this in Peter King's Football Morning in America column. Thought it was interesting. Witten wrote a piece for ESPN, who he now works for, about the impact of social media in locker rooms, and it was pretty interesting. I'll just read a little blurb from his bigger piece, which you could find again at ESPN. One of the defining images of the modern locker room isn't a fiery post-game speech or a group of guys strategizing. It's players with their heads down, buried in their phones. The impact? It's not good. I've seen the negative impact social media can have, particularly on younger players who grew up with Twitter and Instagram as an integral part of life. A player checking Twitter at halftime? I've seen it. The most concerning? Watching a really talented player corrupt his mind and confidence by reading all the critiques from anonymous football experts around the world. Negative social media can ruin a player. Reading your mentions? It's poison. This kind of ties into what you said, Greg, about somebody on SiriusXM could misquote or misparaphrase and it could cause a whole issue. This is the other side of it, that players can really, these young guys are really affected by what they're seeing about themselves on Twitter.
I think Witten's advice is spot on, and this is one of the reasons I have been heavy on the block since the early part of Twitter, that if you do read your mentions, you can become obsessed with it, and you can waste a lot of time replying to people. It can affect your psyche based on what people say about you, and you can get caught saying something back to one of these people that will cost you your job. It's better to block. It's better to ignore these trolls than to engage, and I think Jason Witten is exactly right.
This article was brilliantly written, and I'm starting to look at the Cowboys and say, essentially, if you play for the Cowboys, you want to go announce, you become Tony Romo and you become the best announcer in the entire league in year one. And this article is better than like 98% of the stuff that's on our own website.
Are you sure he wrote it?
Yes, I am sure he wrote it. I really think he did because he actually
they
goes
probably
into,
have a Brooks or Sasimo type who works.
He might be working with someone, but it's pretty. It's you can't draw. I mean, you couldn't make a movie that, I mean, he wrote this the morning before this all happened with Dez Bryant. It was it was on ESPN, and then that happens later in the day. He said one teammate, and I started trying to think who it might be. He said he saw one teammate get completely swallowed up by Twitter feedback, that it's sort of that a person kind of caved. And my immediate thought was like, who is that? And Dez Bryant was certainly one person I thought maybe could have been a candidate for that. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, also players apparently are way into PFF, and it could affect them negatively there as well, which is obviously just some guys that are watching the games and handing out grades, which are fairly arbitrary. But the players, they really are connected and too connected perhaps, but you get it. It's a human thing.
Well, nobody's themselves on Twitter. And I think that's like if you're an athlete, all these people who would never say anything to your face – they say the most despicable things to athletes. Like, to me, if I was a pro athlete, I would not engage on social media in that way at all.
In other news, this is interesting. Dave Ely, of course, is in the running to be Wes's best man next year. Has found himself in a, maybe I would call, mini feud with the Cleveland Browns. Oh, we're taking a trip to the dog pound. Over naming rights of young puppies that the Browns are seeking to adopt on social media. See, it's not all bad. As we know...
Except this turned ugly, so...
Well, that's true. Last week, Ely suggested a name. What was it? Miles McGruff?
That would have been better. It was Miles Garuff.
Garuff, which the Browns then used, but then didn't credit Ely, which got Ely ticked off. And then Dave followed up on Friday with... Hey, at Browns, I have another dog name suggestion, Jabril Puppers.
Which he also said on this podcast.
Which he also said on this podcast. And then sure enough, today the Browns posted another dog, a real beautiful young animal. I was looking for the breed, but they don't have it listed in the tweet. Anyway, meet Jabril Puppers. Oh, a feist mix. And again, no credit given to Dave Ely. And what do we have more on this, Mark?
Well, I think the first instance, David Ely has a real case. Obviously in Cleveland, they probably had some sort of group of people sitting around brainstorming, going through the roster and picking up names. And Jabril Puppers feels like something that probably 25 people would have come up with.
Greg,
that would be my take.
Greg, do you have any more on this story?
The Browns responded immediately.
Oh, I didn't know that.
To David like, Ely
what,
when he
what
said,
analysis do I have
he
on this?
Suggested Jabril Puppers, and they said he's already on the list and gave him a little passive aggressive wink. It was even a sign that hey, we've had a list. You haven't been necessarily coming up with these.
But like for instance,
a
in
wink
our-
they went with because they could have done like the hands up emoji or some type of thumbs up or something else. The wink. Really,
they don't like his tone, I would imagine. He's coming back over and over saying, no, I came up with this. And I think he's got a case. But at the same time, even in our direct messaging client today, I suggested, how about Emmanuel Ogbark? And Andy Hageman, our editor, said they already came up with that. And it's a case in point. There's just this collective group think here.
I think Ely, like, the takeaway for me is he really missed his calling, that he has the same brain that really a social media intern has. Yeah.
So this is causing, it's causing a lot of drama between Ely and the Browns and everything.
And Mark, because Mark's always tied in with anything Browns.
But Andy's my boss, so I have to kind of be like, yeah, I agree with you, Dave.
I have some sources actually down in the newsroom that Ely's continued presence on this show and now with this running dog bit here and he gets on it again is becoming a bit of source of consternation and jealousy within the newsroom. And I've actually obtained through these sources
very good
an audio file which we're going to listen to.
Ooh,
right now
let's hear it.
There's been two softball seasons where I've been a star fucking player, and you guys talk about me, and then don't have me on. But then you call Fry, we need you to do a voiceover. We need you.
What a nightmare.
That was brassy.
That is
our part-time catcher of our softball.
That is about 2%. Of the harangue that she went on for an hour.
I mean, she's our Dez Bryant. So
this character, Brassy, who she's probably mentioned a handful of
character
times on the show, and she said that we've been exploiting her, that we're using her name And that she is very upset that she hasn't been on the show. There she mentioned Frags, who's been done some voiceover work. But she also was very dismissive of David Ealy and his presence on the show. Some of that I just decided I could not put in good conscience on our air.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time professionally in newsrooms in my life, here and other places. And I could say that newsrooms are viper pits by their nature. And none of this surprises me, but I think what Brassey needs to understand, who is, again, a part-time catcher for our team. And
she said she was a star.
Yeah, she was a part-time catcher, I would
say. What did she say again?
Yeah, let's hear it again.
There's been two softball seasons where I've been a star fucking player, and you guys talk about me, and then don't have me on. But then you call Frags, we need you to do a voiceover. We need you.
I think that's
She is, you know, Brassey, she's the player, the charismatic player, the Santonio Holmes type that when things are going good.
Santonio Holmes, the only player ever kicked out of his own offensive huddle.
Yeah, exactly. When things are going good, and you could maybe put Dez in this category as well. He's a great, or she's a great person to have in the locker room, almost a glue type character. But when things maybe start to swerve in a not so great direction and the rats are jumping off the ship, I'll leave it at that.
Ship be sinking.
Well, I did tell her she does have a point that she would be a great character. So I'm in favor of having her on at some point, and we'll have to talk after the show.
We all here. She may be maybe, great. We maybe offered we'll, it once. We'll we did out. Offer this once.
But now,
years ago.
But now we can tell her, look, you have been on the show.
I'm not in love with her tone. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, but you're good. Hitting out a David Ealy thing is a little bit aggressive.
We got a few more minutes.
That was the PG part.
Yeah,
that was the PG part.
Yeah, we had to get it so it was safe. We don't want her.
You guys didn't give her a confirmed yes, did you?
No,
no.
Okay, good. No, in fact, Greg Left was waiting for his Uber, and she was in the backyard still ranting about Greg threatening her, and she doesn't appreciate it.
Well, I said, look, you have to keep this quiet until Monday. If you chatter to anyone, that'll prove.
Well, she took that as a threat.
Finally in the news, very interesting developments down in the newsroom. Finally in the news, David Ealy's favorite team, the Carolina Panthers. They still have a superstar quarterback in the fold, Cam Newton. And this from ESPN staff writer David Newton. Cam Newton sported a pair of fashionable sunglasses as he strutted through rows of teammates already on the grass stretching at the start of Sunday's practice. Let me tell you something, Cam said. Ain't nobody dripping like I'm dripping. And Mr. Newton, the staff writer for ESPN, then translated that to mean dripping means something that is awesome or super cool.
Look at Cam, just like changing the world. You know, more people learning vocab. There's people dabbing all over the world now, partly because of Cam. He's just bringing.
I don't know if I need all of that, but
he is. Cam is. You know, some people like Cam, some people don't like Cam, but you will learn new things that maybe don't always tie into your nature or where you grew up. Cam is a great guy to teach you about things. Some things work. The dab worked.
Dripping's
working.
That's out there. It's not like that's a Cam creation.
But he's bringing it to you know people like us,
sports reporters.
What will we do without it?
Not everything works. Remember his fake language he uses on Instagram. All his Instagram posts have a fake language that he uses. Like
he's hit or miss. He hits when he hits. He hits.
But he never stops innovating and teaching, and I respect that.
It also means extremely highly fashionable. And that, if you look at his press conferences, the guy is never dressed normally on any level. So
no.
I think he's speaking in some fashion sense.
Well, Greg played Cardi B's Drip song for us at the fire pit the other night. And it's catchy.
Song of the summer.
But it's catchy, but you can't help think that, like, so music, songs were invented, say, 10,000 years ago because someone had something profound to say about the human condition. Like, you're the one at the campfire who's going to speak out. You've got this story. And in this case, this woman just has baubles dangling off body parts that she thinks make her drip. Mm. I just think, like, is that what really we need for music? I don't know.
A lot of creativity, though. Come on.
Sometimes we slip into this segment. This is the Greg Likes Rap segment.
I didn't. He brought it up.
Almost every show.
What do we have? What is the name of the song?
Drip.
Oh, Drip.
Classic. Takeoff. Verse of the summer.
I'm going to say it's not a classic.
That's what's happening.
Agree to disagree.
In the news. By the way, don't be self-conscious that Greg likes rap as a segment.
It's like a self-promotional one. He brought it up.
Greg. I didn't bring it up.
Greg did not slide into that segment. It was put on.
Okay. Dan likes it.
It keeps us, you know.
Dan likes it.
Ducka, ducka, ducka.
If you're counting on me to be hip,
it's a good seg.
We're in trouble.
Greg likes rap.
All right, that's what's happening in the news. All right, here we go. It's time to play the game. One word. One word to describe something. Camps are about... Oh, there were some late stragglers, which are way on my radar, by the way. There were two or three teams that waited till Friday to report.
Who's that?
Which, you know, come on, guys.
Wasn't the Lions, was it?
No,
not
they
the
got
Lions.
In there early.
I will say it wasn't Lions. I don't even want to say what the teams are. I'm going to wait and see how the rest of their camp
how this
plays out. If they're going on bowling trips and, we're calling practice off. Let's go to the arcade.
Arcade.
You know who you are and you reported late. I will be watching this.
So you're not convinced that it's they show up on a mandated day, which is based on when their first preseason game shows up. That they're
clearly, I'm not totally convinced, Greg.
Okay.
Clearly, I think they took a loophole, and they will pay for it once football comes around in regular season form. Anyway, so camps for the most part are a week old. Everyone is preparing now for the 2018 season. So let's now get into it. One word to describe something we've picked up on and then an explanation. I'll get it going just to so everybody knows exactly what we're going for here. I'll start with the team, the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles. Why not start with the champs? And the word? Here comes the word. I wrote it down in my phone. And now, here it is. All right, here's the word. The Eagles are maybe conflicted. How great is it that Carson Wentz is practicing and looks healthy? His head coach, Doug Peterson, said that he's a little hesitant still, and it's tying into what was a very serious knee injury. I'm only now learning, and maybe because it was in the middle of the season when it happened, and he just kind of, he tore his ACL, it happens. But it was a more serious knee injury than just the torn ACL. He also ripped up his LCL, so it's a considerable reconstructive knee surgery that Carson Wentz underwent, and it was late last year that he had the surgery, and maybe even early January, as I recall. One of the waiting for the swelling to go on, down situations. Anyway, everything is going in the right direction. He's practicing. I referenced the Peter King column I read this morning. King was at the camp and said that he was able to avoid pass rushers, make good throws. Everything seems to be in the right direction. But I would think that the Eagles must remain conflicted about how they're going to play this situation because you do have the defending Super Bowl MVP in your building. Your first, your schedule to start the season is not unforgiving. I mean, they could probably survive with Nick Foles and maybe even thrive with Nick Foles. So I'm wondering what Carson Wentz is going to have to show to make them say, all right, we are 100% confident he's our week one starter, because I don't think they should start him unless they are fully confident that they're not putting any risk on the situation.
I think that's how medical teams in the NFL work. If he gets the green light, he plays. If there's any reservation.
I feel like they usually end up playing, but they have such a good backup plan here. They have the best backup plan possible.
I don't think that really figures into it. I think if he's cleared, he plays. I don't think it matters who's behind him.
He's reportedly looked great. Everyone that's gone down and watched the Eagles, and Doug Peterson essentially echoed it by saying, if you didn't know that he had surgery, he just looks the same. And so when I hear that in the first few of camp, I'm figuring I'm expecting him to be the week one starter, barring some sort of setback.
What about the conflicted side about how much to play him in the preseason and put him out there and test him that way versus playing it safe, getting him fully healthy? That maybe is where they have to game plan for him in August. That's a little
part
tough
of it, because you don't want to not give him enough work, and then you don't really know how the knee's going to operate when it comes time to actually play. Or if you give him too much work and he suffers a setback, all that stuff, they have to be a little bit conflicted. But still, ultimately, it's a good problem. And the Eagles right now, a lot of things around the Eagles are good.
They are, but they're balancing a lot of these situations. Alshon Jeffrey has an injury. I don't know if that's serious, but Jason Peters obviously coming back from a really serious injury. Brandon Graham is coming back from surgery. Timmy Jernigan probably not going to be ready for the beginning of the year coming back from surgery. So they're managing a lot of key players and trying to figure out when they're going to be available.
Mark, you are going to give us one word involving the Indianapolis Colts.
I will, as soon as the drum roll begins.
Wow, he wants it.
Wants the drum roll, and I respect it.
I'm hyphenating this word. It is sleeper cell.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why.
Well, you called for the drum roll, but didn't wait for the drum roll.
That's my fault, Erica. Apologies. Now you can end it. Sometimes I do my version of Colleen, who you're obsessed with, by not knowing how games operate, already slipping into a hyphenated two-word word. But sleeper cell.
Again, a two-way obsession, according to Erica.
Two-way. It goes both ways, according to you.
Does Gonzo know
about
leave
this? It right there. She's not responding.
He's cool with it.
Okay.
Sleeper cell for the Colts.
Yes.
And because I just viewed them as asleep for all of last season and for a while, and I think under Pagano, they, to me, had just lost any sort of intrigue. Their luster was gone. And then you've lost Andrew Luck. Last year, they were a rough watch week after week. Now, over the weekend, because this is about what happened in the last week, finally, we get to see Andrew Luck play in this scrimmage. And he's 19 of 22 in full pads. And it's not just forget the numbers. It's that he immediately is connecting twice on deep passes with T.Y. Hilton. The offense is waking up. And suddenly you look at this team that I would have, without Andrew Luck, just simply buried as a top five pick in the next year's draft. I could see them doing a little bit of damage. They're not a complete team, but they never have been with Andrew Luck. You could see them doing some damage, riding Luck through the season, taking out a few AFC South teams and being in the mix in December.
Sleeper cell, a sleeper in the AFC.
Yes.
I'm with you.
Seeing the update,
in a weak AFC,
it was
too.
A Sunday evening sort of special, you know, season ticket holders come and watch the team situation, and there was one tweet where Luck had hit four straight deep passes, and like that got me excited for the season. That was one of my favorite items and most significant, I think, items of news that we've had. Because a week ago at this time, you didn't really know, and now I think it's fair for Colts fans to get excited.
Sleeper cell extends to fantasy too. I want the Colts quarterback in a lot of shootouts with that defense in fantasy.
Sleeper cell. Is that a hyphen it?
It's a word. Mm. It's just,
seeing a lot of two words.
Is
Ooh. Just saying.
No. I think that you have a
think
point
I might
that
be
it's $5 often.
In the,
it could just be sleeper.
Sinjar.
Isn't the White House a word?
No.
It's two words.
I know it's two words. Like, I'm going by definition. You're going by amount of words.
That's
could turn it into
me,
a verb and
put it
sleeper
this way,
sell something.
When I realized that
amount
we
of words,
so,
I feel like is probably the right
when
metric.
When we got so hooked on the one word thing, I was like on thesaurus.com during this podcast trying to find something else for sleeper cell, and I could not come up
what
with it.
What about sleeper?
A little boring.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And again, as we move on to the next person, Wes, the name of the segment, one word.
This is one word.
All right.
Wool gathering.
Ooh.
Oh, let me set you up.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Wes.
That's a word?
I'll set you up. Oh, jeez. Dallas Cowboys.
Wool gathering. That is a word.
I'm looking it up.
It's probably used by your grandma and grandpa at some point.
All right. They both passed on, but thanks for bringing that up.
Are you going to tell me what it means? Or
wool gathering, one word. Wes is in the money. Indulgence, an aimless thought or dreamy imagining, absent-mindedness.
Lost in fanciful dreams, trying to stuff clouds into briefcases like the Cowboys are doing with Tavon Austin and Cole Beasley. Give me a break. Your daydreams of Tavon Austin as this hybrid running back receiver getting 15 touches a game, leading your receivers room. Give me a break. Cole Beasley, we're going to have him run the whole route tree. We're not going to put the 5'9" white guy in the slot anymore. We're going to put him outside and have him beat the best cornerbacks in the league on the outside. You guys.
Don't check your mentions, Cole.
You guys are wool gathering.
I knew Wes would be good at this game, by the way. I knew this would be a Wes specialty. Excellent word.
Yeah, there's something to what he's saying, too. Like, their backup quarterback situation. It's funny how the storylines are always based on what happened the previous year. So, like, the year when after Romo got hurt, it's like everyone's talking about the backup quarterbacks in Cowboys camp. Now Dak Prescott's the starting quarterback. Their backup quarterbacks are Cooper Rush, Mike White, and Dalton Sturm. Dalton Sturm is an undrafted free agent, probably not in the mix there. But Mike White and Cooper Rush, and they like Cooper Rush. And I heard them talking.
He was great in the preseason
about how much
year.
They like, and maybe he's fine. But when I hear them talking about how they're really excited about the depth at their quarterback position, that feels like a little cloud stuffing or whatever.
Yeah,
he said.
A little wool gathering.
Wool gathering.
Cloud stuffing works.
He said cloud stuffing. He said
stuffing those clouds into your briefcase, Jerry James.
I loved that. It was a great image.
Ooh, very good. Very good. Football Almanac. Pro Football Almanac. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Dak Prescott was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league in the second half of last year. He'll be an interesting guy to track this year.
Great, great looking offensive line, though. With that was what killed.
Well, Ben McAdoo told us that.
I believe in Dak.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, he's like second year quarterback.
When Tyron Smith went down, that killed them even more than when Zeke went down. And Football Outsiders wrote about that. Great, great purchase if you're into a little preseason book.
It's awesome. Purchase. Okay. Greg Rosenthal, one word on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay, I didn't know we were just looking for like a hard word or anything.
You can use any word.
Yeah, I was just
again
looking.
The segment one word.
Yeah, I was looking. All right, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Awkward.
Okay, there you go.
All right,
that is my word.
It even has word in it. Awkward.
They put up all of these signs all around the stadium. Get excited for the next season. Their starting quarterback not on any of those signs. Even more importantly, Ryan Fitzpatrick is taking first-team reps because he has to get ready for the start of the season.
Awkward.
Jameis Winston with the backup sometimes with the first team. That's awkward. And then what really made me want to talk about them is that Dirk Koetter has talked to Jameis Winston about possibly toning down his vocal leadership. And that now I don't know if this is something that the writers in Tampa that I'm talking about, Roy Cumming, who wrote the column, said that maybe Jameis was going to do anyways a little bit, maybe tamp it down a little bit, some of his antics. But the fact that you have the coach of your team kind of telling your quarterback, hey, lead from behind. That was his wording. Maybe lead from behind this year. And this is a coach without a lot of long-term security either, and you're telling your starting quarterback that, and to me that's just awkward. And it's
and what a point of departure from a year ago and even the year before, where the word out of Tampa Bay was always how enamored they were with Winston's leadership. And right. He was the centerpiece of Hard Knocks for being that vocal leader, and one season later it's please tone it down.
I feel like and I'll count myself in this, kind of got taken for a ride a little bit by Jameis Winston on Hard Knocks. I even named him the Hard Knocks MVP because he came off as not only a guy that just 23 years old last summer and a guy, this is who you want to build your roster around. He's taking you to his old neighborhood and showing you how he grew up and how friendly he was and how everybody seemed to connect with him. But as it turns out, and he was drafted 2013, was it?
14.
2014. It's now turning out 4 years on.
15, maybe.
All right, 3-4 years on, it's turning out that he is kind of all the things that people worried about and what made a lot of like hand-wringing and the consternation is Jameis Winston, a guy you really want to build your franchise around. Here the Bucs are in 2018, and they're still asking themselves that question, and that is not a good thing. Leading from behind is the last thing you'd ever would have hoped for that to be the message to your quarterback at this stage.
It's very possible they'll have a new coach next offseason who has to rethink this whole Jameis Winston experience.
To be clear, I think Cutter's making a mistake. Obviously you have conversations with Jameis Winston about all of these things, but to put it out in front and say that we kind of don't want you to be as much of a leader, he's going to be the starting quarterback in week 4. And that, to me, it's a confusing message to send, to tell him don't be as much of a leader.
Yeah, it's not confusing to the other 52 players on the roster, though. Like, he's not just Jameis's coach. He's the whole team's coach.
All right, well, one more time around the horn. Mark, get us going.
Do you want to announce the team as you've been doing?
Are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
One word. I repeat, one word on the Atlanta Falcons.
Drum roll.
Let it play out.
It's going to take some.
I got you covered, Dan, when you get back to me.
Okay.
Disruptor.
No! You gotta wait till the drum stops. That's what the drum roll is.
Disruptor.
All right.
What a disaster.
The Falcons, disruptor.
Now, I initially had it as dynasty disruptor.
Mm.
Because I think the Falcons.
The hyphen in there.
Yeah, but no, I just
made a good edit.
I just went disruptor.
Nice edit, bro.
Thank you. They, to me, I was, when I was watching them yesterday on NFL Network, they brought Dan Quinn over. And we've met with Dan Quinn. We like Dan Quinn for a long, long time. I just think that he had – last year was all about how do you shake the Super Bowl and how do you deal with this new offensive coordinator. All this, like, hideous psychological adjusting that he needed to be in charge of. They, from top to bottom, seem ultra-confident. All their star players are back. I think this coaching staff has done a better job than almost any team in the league of drafting and developing young players. You've seen the defense where they were at the end of last season when we were at that playoff game when they shut the Rams down. We're going to get more of that. And they just have a great core of veteran and young players. This reminds me a little bit of the Broncos team after getting whipped in the Super Bowl by Seattle that 2 years later came back against all expectations and won the Super Bowl when most people thought, no, it's going to go somewhere else. I think this is a Super Bowl team that's going to disrupt Philadelphia's plans to become a dynasty. Disruptor.
One thing I've noticed
about
how quickly they've turned around that defense, basically purely with draft picks, they placed an inordinate emphasis on explosive, dynamic athletes with high spark scores. It makes me wonder why every team in the league doesn't rebuild their defense in the same way.
I think Quinn got that from, we want to redo what we had in Seattle, similar type of like edgy athletic players. And sometimes that's a nice plan, but then 4 years later, you don't have any of those guys. They found them, right, and they turned them into good players.
And they're going to start signing him. Grady Jarrett's next up in line for a contract extension, and he deserves one.
Chris Wessling, one word to describe the Cleveland Browns.
Brigadoon.
Brigadoon.
For those of you under the age of 80, is a musical, I believe from the 50s, about a mysterious Scottish village that appears for only one day every 100 years. It's a musical, so you know when the Scottish village appears. People spontaneously break out into dances. There's galas, seductions, romantic dalliances, trysts. In Cleveland, in training camp, you got puppies, you got RVs, you got the hard land, you got bon ami, you got festivals, you got everybody's darling. It's going to last one day and then be buried again, fade away into the mountain mist like Brigadoon did.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Mark,
a little bit of a drive-by.
That was great.
Mark's actually under the table in a position now.
I see what you mean from
That's not where I thought that was going, by the way.
I see what you mean from the training camp angle, where it acts like it's a month-long celebration of all that has been and is to come. And then September arrives, typically, and by around September 12th, you realize you don't have a team. The one thing that I think is a little bit different here is that Tyrod Taylor is giving them some consistency and taking almost all the first-team reps when last year, for instance, in many years, it was three quarterbacks all splitting first-team reps. None of them were first-teamers. And I am starting to buy into everything that's being said about Baker Mayfield.
Yes.
Me too.
It is growing daily.
But this is the problem. That your head coach, who last year could not pick a quarterback and stand by him for a week at a time, this year has picked a quarterback and is sticking by him and saying there's no competition, even though Baker Mayfield is so far proving to be everything that would make you want to draft him at number one overall. And by October, people are going to be saying there will be a controversy. Why isn't Baker Mayfield playing?
Yeah.
Browns are a high-profile team for a team that never wins any games. It's interesting.
A high-profile team, yeah, that they've been so
well.
Bad.
They're never boring. But they're also never good on the field.
Right. They're a special type of bad that makes them a story. They're not just the Bengals or the Jets or some other team that's just kind of like wandering through lost seasons. They're really good at being bad, and now they're trying to be really good. There's a lot of juice to it. Let's face it.
I think at the end of the Brigadoon, isn't there a happy reunion? I think it ends happily.
I'll have to go back and rewatch that film. I'm not sure I've seen it the first time around.
One word to describe the state of the Seattle Seahawks. Listen up, 12s midstream. And you can look it up. That's one word. Midstream. Earl Thomas is still.
Wait, what's the definition of it?
The kind of just in the middle. Just you're caught.
You don't want to interrupt someone midstream.
Yeah, you don't want to be. They're not on one side or other of land. They're kind of just floating in
the
middle.
Here's one definition.
Yeah,
the middle of a stream.
They're in the middle. They're literally in the middle of the stream. Here's an organization.
Where did
I'm
they
looking
come up
at
with that?
That's online right now. There's a
Thank
second
you,
definition.
Dictionary.com.
What's the second definition?
The middle period of a process, course, or the like.
That works as well.
Yeah.
It's midstream. So the Seattle, obviously, who's gone? Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman, Cliff Avril. I'm missing somebody.
Cam Chancellor.
Cam Chancellor. And Earl Thomas is just this one guy that's held over from the famed Legion of Boom days. And really, it is overdue that he should have been moved out of here. If they thought they weren't going to give him a new deal, they should have moved him out before the draft. They should have picked a better time, that maybe last year when they could have seen this all coming. But they didn't, and now they still have him here. And you have Pete Carroll in press conferences at training camp saying he should be here. And you have Earl Thomas who's digging his heels in, and you're looking at a situation that could be, a huge distraction for the team, but B, and that's kind of where the midstream thing comes in, it's time for this organization to fully move on. But the Earl Thomas thing is kind of keeping them in this past, this recent past, and not allowing them to fully do that. And I don't know if at this point things are so toxic and the timing of the NFL calendar makes a trade very difficult, but I would take what I could at this point and just move on and give the younger guys a chance to play. I know they have Maurice Alexander, a guy they picked up last year. He was working with the number one defense today. Bradley McDougal is a free safety. So they have these guys that are kind of the future of the team. Move on. Get out of midstream. Get to the other side. Get to dry land.
So to what end is this Seahawks' current stance on Earl Thomas? What do they hope to get out of this?
To him just play out his deal?
What? That makes no sense to me.
That's what they're hoping.
That makes no sense to me. And what is a midstream year? We're not going to use rebuilding. A midstream year. I don't think they're strong enough to contend for the Super Bowl title this year. So why are you trying to get one last age 29 season out of Earl Thomas?
What else are you going to get? A draft pick that you can get in the offseason anyways.
You can get it now.
Right,
if you get it in the offseason, you can't use it until another year.
Except part of it.
What do you mean? I mean, either way, it's a 2019 draft pick. So
if they let him go through, they get a compensatory pick.
I'm saying
pick
in a trade, in
use.
A potential trade. I mean, they could franchise him.
They can't trade him in the offseason.
The whole problem, though, is that Seattle's trying to sell to their fans and everyone this idea that it's not rebuilding, but we're going to give you a second version of the Seahawks. And that means a new culture where a lot of these players that were around that got tired potentially of the Pete Carroll message have been moved on. And Earl Thomas is sort of like the guy that's still there. You blew up the whole Legion of Boom, and he's still there. He's not happy.
Finish the job.
Right.
Move on to the next phase of your organization.
He's like Marcus Grant right now.
The roster's midstream.
Poor Marcus. We don't want to trade Marcus, though.
I mean, they're playing guys because there was a couple injuries at wide receiver, and guys like Keenan Reynolds and David Moore and Marcus Johnson are getting a lot of snaps. And if you look at who's getting the snaps on defense, and maybe these will turn out to be good young players like Tedrick Thompson, but it's Jaron Reed on defense, Marcus Smith. You know, it's a midstream roster. A lot of guys that I don't necessarily think will be a big part of when they are good again.
Maybe the case for a trade is you can bring somebody, an actual player back that can fill a hole. I don't know what his trade value is at this point. A year ago, maybe they could have gotten a second-round pick, or who knows, maybe a late first-round pick. But now, what, fourth-rounder? Worse?
I think they'll wait it out. He has to show up at some point, or else he loses that year of eligibility. So he will show up at some point. And so you either trade him, I guess, or you try to get some value out of him and maybe tag him next.
Seems like
it's not worth it to have him come in after 10 games so he can keep his free agency or whatever.
To Dan's point, the timing of it all is a disaster right now.
And he seems like a pretty strong-willed individual. It's a rough situation. Finally, Greg, one word on the Buffalo Bills.
Dispiriting.
I was hoping you were going to go in a positive direction because some people are getting excited, but you're saying dispiriting.
There are people getting excited about the Bills?
I don't know.
You wait to make the playoffs for 17 years. You finally have a good young head coach, I think, in Sean McDermott, and you would hope to be building on that. And instead, you're splitting reps three ways between A.J. McCarron, Nathan Peterman, and Josh Allen.
Dog.
And that never really seems to work. And depending on who you read, you know, Peterman started off very slow, but he's getting a lot of first-team reps. McCarron isn't really processing the offense. Allen is up and down, but you got to make some decisions. This is not – the two veterans between McCarron and Peterman aren't good enough – to bother to split it three ways and keep Josh Allen out the field. Develop Josh Allen and make a choice with one of the other two, because they're going to need all the work they can get. They got Andre Holmes and Malachi Dupree as starting wide receivers right now. So they need to get as much work as they possibly can with the quarterback that they're going to go with in week one.
What about Dez Bryant pulling the late period Terrell Owens move and going to Buffalo?
It's a logical team because he would make them better.
They showed interest, reportedly, from the beginning, and Dez didn't want to go there.
Well, I wonder now, when he realizes how few options he has, except why not wait 2 weeks because everyone's getting injured left and right, and then you see maybe another option opens up. I couldn't agree more, Greg, because the teams that do this, where you're giving reps three ways, it never works. It never works. And their offensive line is going to get two of these quarterbacks killed before the third one has to start anyways during the season.
Is that really their fault, or is it that the offseason program is so much shorter now that they don't have enough time to figure out which one of those three guys?
Well, that's fair, but at the same time, they're dealing with the same limitations that every team is. Why not have one guy get as much preparation as you can going into week one?
Right. The other guys are going to get snaps. It's just going to be with the third team.
Biggest problem is they signed the wrong guy in free agency. They signed A.J. McCarron instead of somebody better.
They reportedly, I think, wanted to be in on Sam Bradford. That didn't happen, and yeah, they ended with McCarron.
Do you think Des Mark knows about, you know, Western New York's a beautiful area? You think he knows about NF, Niagara Falls?
I would imagine it's probably, you know, anecdotally been introduced to him. I don't know if he's been there.
And I just looked it up. It's not one of the seven wonders of the world, Niagara Falls.
Mm.
Absolutely has a case in my mind.
Let's get on that.
To be one.
Let's get on that committee.
Yeah, but there's the 300.
What's that?
There are like 300 wonders that have a case.
Which wonder are you knocking out of the lineup for?
You know,
for
you
want to
hear? You want to hear what I'm getting at? Get out of here, Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
That doesn't even exist anymore.
Don't need ya.
Those are ancient wonders. There are seven new wonders of the world.
Update this list. Get Niagara Falls on there. Present that to Dez and see what happens. He's signing.
All right. I would have replaced something else, but
I believe there is an updated Wonders of the World list.
Well, that was the classic seven.
Right.
I use the
there
classic.
There is.
I don't think the Colossus of Rhodes is still around either.
Mm. That big donut near the airport at LAX, you know, that you ran.
That's in? That's in.
Yeah. I only recognize the classic Seven Wonders.
What about See You Later, Taj Mahal?
Taj.
That's one of the new ones.
Don't take out Taj Mahal.
Taj is great.
You're not getting rid of the Roman Coliseum.
He's been doing good work.
Machu Picchu and Chichen Itza. What about that?
Chichen Itza.
One of those ones. That kind of, you can maybe sort of combine those two into one thing.
I've already stated my case to get rid of the Hanging Gardens. All right, that's it for the Around the NFL podcast presented by New Era. Have you nominated the Around the NFL podcast for the Listener Podcast Awards yet? It's free. Easy to do. Just head to podcastawards.com, nominate Around the NFL in the sports category. You know, if you just do this, I'll never read this ever again, and you'll never have to ever worry about hearing this. Just vote. And once we win, Erica, are we going to win?
Definitely.
It'll be a bit of a La Raville Magnifico if we don't win. Put it that way. And I don't think you guys listening want to know who's being exposed.
The subject of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, again, podcastawards.com, nominated Around the NFL in the sports category. And a reminder that our video show is coming up later this week. Our next time you'll hear from us is Wednesday. And then on Thursday, starting at noon Eastern, NFL.com/ATN Live, you could check out our video show. Good stuff. We'll be back. Oh, one announcement, not a minor one. Yes, we'll be in the studio on Wednesday. On Friday's show, we'll be recapping our time at Los Angeles Rams camp. How about that? The 2017 team of ATL. We're going to be at Rams camp. We're going to talk to some big fish, not Evan Silva, but some big fish connected to the Rams. So we're going to be on the road. Road trip.
It's a big announcement.
Shotgun.
I mean, you put out a list of who you want to talk to, and sometimes like they might try to give you the lowest level, but our list of 7 or 8 requests are all major names.
Well, you're just setting us up for failure there.
We don't know.
We're going to end up with Jim Everett's like caddy.
We could work with that.
All right, that's it.
First Irvine, next stop London.
Oh, yeah!
Oh, we heard you, all of the people excited about our trip to London first week of September. Twitter blowing up over that. We cannot wait to see you. So we're going to have more London talk, and maybe a famous London sports personality or a British sports personality coming on our show soon to talk about that.
Maybe a prince. Little hint.
Little hint. It's Prince Harry, baby. All right, let's go. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, and the loose cannon behind the glass. Till Wednesday!